Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, people out there in Mafia Free Radio Land, Radio Free Mafia Land. I get confused. Why am I confused this morning? Obviously, parked in front of my home is a white Ford van. Does those weird look dripping out of the back. I'm not sure what that's about. But now we have on the phone the driver of this white Ford van with a little red look dripping out of the back of it. The good looking, the very, very cool, the ultimately famous true crime writer herself, Minnie L. Elford. The woman, I understand, is so fantastically great when it comes to all things. We're not done yet. We have to praise you some more. See? We need to praise this person.
Good morning.
She's
I'm so glad we're getting to talk.
Oh, I'm glad we're getting to talk, too. See? Yeah. So, Minnie, briefly, how do you get interested in doing true crime stuff?
You know, that's a really good question. I became interested in it at a very young age and just got a passion for wanting to try to understand kind of the dark mind and why people do what they do. We'll never completely figure that out, but it was just always interesting to me.
Okay. Do you have any, you've started to talk to a couple of different people over the years, have you not?
Oh, yes. I've talked to 10 to 15 for over 10 years now.
Wow.
Different
and you recently wrote...
And, I'm sorry?
I'm sorry? No, I cut you off. I apologize. Okay. I understand you wrote a book about one of them called Robert Yates. I apologize.
Yes.
Can you tell us about how you met him and what he all did?
Well, I talked with Robert for several years, and he ended up giving me his handwritten journals and diaries, and they were a lot. And just through the years got to know him, but the reason I initially started to write Robert was his grandmother lived close to where I live in Tennessee years back, and I think it was like 1945, and she ended up killing her husband one night, just ambushed him with an axe. And when I started reading about that, that's what made me reach out to Robert to start talking with him, even though he was then in Washington State. But I thought it was fascinating, his background story with him becoming a serial killer and his grandmother killing his grandfather. So that's kind of what got me into talking with Robert. It was very interesting, and she never went to prison. They ended up putting her in a mental hospital, and then she was released a few years later and became a nurse. Is that not crazy? I keep thinking to myself, she murdered her husband literally and then became a nurse several years down the road when she was released from a mental hospital. But that was a different time and place back then, but I always thought that was quite strange.
It is quite strange. Now, how many people did this guy kill?
Well, he's only been convicted of approximately 17, but I truthfully believe he's killed more than that simply because he was in the service and traveled to Germany and Somalia and different countries. And there's been missing cases kind of linked up to when he was overseas in different places. Never convicted of them, but I always wondered, were there more? And I kind of believe that they were.
Yeah, I hear that one. So what did he do, randomly pick people up off the street, or?
Yes, the thing I thought was sad was he would use the excuse of taking his daughter to work, which he did, but late at night when she was at work, because he said she didn't have a vehicle, he would hang out in the streets looking for prostitutes. And when he would find prostitutes, while his daughter was working, he was taking their life. And I always thought, you know, some of his victims were so young. You know, his youngest was 16. And at the time, he had teenage daughters. And that's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around, how you could take somebody's life knowing that it could be your child. But that didn't seem to faze him. And that's when he got heavily into drugs as well. He told me he never did drugs until he started picking up prostitutes. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he told me. And I think for so long they didn't look into it enough because they were prostitutes, and I think that is so sad that there wasn't more interest brought into it because maybe they could have ended it before he took as many lives as he did.
Yeah, something to that. Did he have an issue with women, or is this simply a vicious killer?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Sure. Did our guy have a... Was he a vicious killer, or did he simply hate women?
Oh, I think he hated women. It's just recently come out. He denied it for years, but he was also a necrophiliac, so after he would kill them, he would want to go back and have sex with them. And that was one part he tried to keep hidden for years. I don't know if he felt like that was an embarrassment. I mean, obviously it is, but why he's just now coming clean and open with that part is strange to me because he admitted to killing them, but he just didn't want to admit to going back and having sex with their bodies. He's my second necrophiliac. My third necrophiliac. Andre Crawford was a serial killer out of Illinois, and he did the same thing. And he never wanted to admit it for a long time either. But he would murder his victims, and he told me in explicit dialogue he murdered them and would like try to place them in a warehouse where he could then at least go back and have sex with their body one more time. And he said it's just you could do stuff with a dead woman you couldn't do with a live woman. And I think it was just the complete control he felt at that moment he had.
That's troubling.
Yes. It really is. And before he died, he had drew me this picture of a woman he had never admitted to killing. And he admitted it in that drawing because he knew he was getting very sick, and he was carrying her up. He was a fantastic artist, and he's carrying her up into looks like an attic or a crawl space, and with his knife, even though she was dead, he was wrote her name on the back of it, and had told me that was his last victim before he was arrested.
How many people did he kill?
He killed 11. He's convicted of 11. Well, he's dead, but he was convicted of 11. And the odd thing to me about Andre was he worked during the daytime. He was a garbage truck driver there in Illinois, and he would help kids in gang environments, like try to get them to school safe and whatnot. And then at night, he would kill women. And that's always been something that's intrigued me. How can you be, it's like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation.
Yeah.
You know, he never hurt a child, but he did women, and, you know, that's odd. He told me he had to reach out to help in some way, and, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, I don't even know how you wrap your mind around that. You're helping in the morning, and you're killing at night. He did.
It's incredible. I mean, this alone is quite troubling because we know that Jeffrey Dahmer, the guy from Milwaukee who actually got men off the streets and killed them and did all kinds of horrific things to them. He used to drink, and to my understanding, he used to drink a lot in order to suppress his feelings. Did our first person, Mr. Yates, go into drugs in order to try to suppress those feelings, or was he simply a drug abuser and also decided to kill women?
Well, you know, he told me that he had never wanted to drink or do drugs, and he occasionally drank, he said, when he was in the military and then got violently ill. I guess he just drank too much, and he never wanted to drink again. And he said he had never done drugs until he was picking the women up. And, for instance, he would buy them drugs for sexual favors, and that's when he became addicted to, like, cocaine or meth or, anything to jack you up. And that's, he told me he had never done them until then. So I think he's telling the truth, but you never know for sure. But I think he would have been, kicked out of the military because he would have been drug tested and whatnot. And I think he was telling the truth that he didn't do it till he was out of the military.
Yeah, it makes sense here. And again, speaks the question, did he take the drug that tries to, not so much I'm thinking now, not to suppress the feelings, but to let them come out?
You know, I wondered that. But see, I would think to suppress them, he would have wanted to do some sort of downer drug. But he was doing drugs to make him be able to go and go and go, where his mind didn't shut off. So I think he actually, it made him even more violent not to suppress it. He wanted it to get him going. And I think
right.
that's how,
to,
yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking,
and,
too, is that in order to make himself more comfortable with the act, the heinous act he was about to do, he had
right.
to get himself in that state. Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And how many people did Mr. Yates kill? I know you said once, but what's that number again?
Well, at least 17. And the youngest was 16. And, you know, the sad thing to me about what when Robert started killing, he was young himself. And his first two victims, he only killed one man, admittedly. And he walked up on them. It was Patrick Oliver and Susan Savage. And they were just fishing one day and where he liked to go in the woods. And he saw them and just went and shot them. He shot the man three times and Susan two times. And they were just young college students with a bright future ahead. And I said, why did you do that? And he said, it just saw them and decided to take their life. And the crazy thing is, where he's serving the rest of his life in prison, he was working as a correctional officer at this time at that same prison. This was before he joined the Army. And that is just, I can't understand it. As many times as I've asked him, I still can't understand it. You know, it was 1975, and he said he had his gun and walked upon them and just took their life and then tried to hide them under brush, and they were found. And I just, that's so heartbreaking that they were so young and had done nothing. Not that anybody does anything to, you know, necessarily die for these innocent victims. It's just he said he couldn't control that feeling.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, to say the least. I mean, I wonder.
You know, it's, I'm sorry.
Go on, I'm sorry. No, my fault. Go on, please.
Oh, no, I was just, you know, they were just young, innocent kids, basically, and to just walk upon somebody and decide you want to shoot them is different.
It could be you and me. It could be our kids. It could be our grandchildren who
exactly
going their own business, maybe at the skate park, and boom, some guy shows up and, you know, boom,
right.
You're dead.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like the Zodiac walking up on people to an extent, just want to, you know, I think he though hunted them down more, but I think Robert just happened upon them that day, and it took him over, and he killed them. And
yeah,
we're looking from, like, approximately 1975 to 1998 of him killing people, and that's what makes me think he had more victims than he was convicted of. Because you don't go that long with a cooling off period. Because his next admitted killing from 1975 wasn't until 1988, and I just don't believe that that's right. He didn't go that many years without killing someone else.
That makes me think of all the bodies that sometimes are discovered. You know, that like I live outside of Milwaukee, and I'm thinking, in the last few years, there's probably been four or five bodies that were just found.
Right.
And, you know, how did they get, and I wonder how they got there. Maybe someone came through here that was a serial killer and decided to kill them or dump their bodies.
Yes.
Wow.
And you always wonder, you know, if somebody is traveling through or, you know, they don't want to be linked to their own state. I've often thought in, the last serial killer I talked to, Philip Jablonski, he traveled everywhere, literally throughout the years, and he dumped bodies, he killed people just because, you know, he had that urge, and he never necessarily had a home base. He was from California, and had killed people in California, but he also told me he killed in Utah and in Texas and just throughout, you know, the United States, and that's troubling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can get in my car and in an hour be in Illinois, in 2 hours I can be in Iowa. You know, in six hours I can be in Minnesota. You know, I could drive. Yeah. Yeah,
it's just scary, yeah.
It's scary. I mean, wow.
It just makes you wonder because Philip Dubosky had told me that he had, you know, done a few other killings that he was not convicted of. And I was talking to him about it, and I said, well, do you care if I explore these or talk about them in the book I'm working on? And he said, I don't mind you talking about them. He said, I'm already on death row. They're not going to give me anything worse. And the most troubling fact to me was a little six-year-old boy he told me he killed in Utah. And he said he was traveling through. He had also been in the military, received a Purple Heart. He was in the fall of Saigon, did some outstanding things in the military, and then he comes out and murders people. But he had told me this little boy, he was traveling through Utah and stayed at a hotel. And this really just takes your mind to a place like how does people do this? And he told me when he checked in, because it was the motels, you know, were just on one level basically in that time frame. And he said he walked in to stay at this hotel the night, and he actually checked in the afternoon, but he was staying the night. And he said that the people who were on the hotel were throwing this little boy a birthday party. And he said the minute he saw this little boy, he knew he had to have him. And I didn't say anything. I was just looking at him and listening. And he said, I knew that that little boy would not see another birthday. And I thought, oh, my word. And then he said that night he went and fantasized about how he would get the little boy and what he would do to the little boy. And he said, I knew he would be out playing the next day somewhere around the parking lot. And he said, I saw him playing with kittens by the dumpster. And he said he went over there, and he always kept like a taser-type stun gun with him, always, and tased the little boy and took him into the hotel room. And this is the part that got me. He said it was only about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes later, the mother was going on each of the hotel rooms knocking, have you saw my little boy, have you saw my little boy? And he said it aroused him because when she knocked on his door, he knew the little boy was in there. And he said, no, I've not saw him, but I'll help you look for him. And he said, all the time, I've got him wrapped up in a blanket. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness gracious. And, he, you know, that was exciting to him because he was not just overpowering the little boy, but his mother mentally because he knew he had him. And he took him to a rest area. He checked out of the hotel, took him to a rest area, raped him, and killed him. And I just think to my, and he said, I had to dump him upside down into the garbage can. I didn't want to just put him head up. And that to me is symbolic, like he was just trash, head down into a garbage can.
Yeah.
You know, and he told me it was just that overpowering feeling of being godlike for that moment. And it's, I mean, how do you understand it? I don't guess you can.
I don't think you can either.
Just scary.
Mm-hmm. And
just scary.
Very scary. And I'll say something that some people won't find very politically correct. I really, really think these serial killer types need to be publicly executed.
Oh, absolutely.
I know it won't come back to the victims. And I know it's only revenge, but I want that revenge.
I agree with you. I think we need to go back to things like that to put a little fire under people and understand you can't continuously get away with this and live. Especially when you know that you know, these crimes have taken place. And the part with Jablonski that bothered me, he had told me when he was because he was released. He had murdered and was released again. And that's another part that just drives me crazy. Why did they release him again? But he was released again, went out and murdered again. And he told me when they, when he went into San Quentin, that he told them he would tell them some cold cases he's done. And I've researched this. He was telling the truth. He told me that he told them he had some cases he would, you know, tell them about that he did. And they shackled him and leg chains, you know, arm chains. He deserved all that. But they took him and held him in a hot room for 8 hours. No water, no nothing. And he said when they finally come to talk to him, he was so pissed off he didn't tell anything anymore. And I don't blame him. I mean, what he did was wrong and what they done was wrong. But they could have gave family closure if they would have just listened. And that makes me angry because that's not right. I mean, if you bite the bullet, even though you don't want to deal with these people, you bite the bullet for a greater cause. And they were not willing to do that for whatever reason. And that just breaks my heart because, you know, there might have been somebody found out what did happen to their child.
Yeah.
And
if
it'll never be known, man.
If they can do something to help bring closure, I'm all for it. It's insane. I'm glad I'm not in law enforcement. I could not handle what they must go through and see almost on a daily basis.
Right. I agree. I think it's terrible. I just don't understand when you have somebody there willing to tell you, even if part of it was made up, because you hear, well, they're making it up, they want more glory. But let's say just one of what he was going to tell them was the truth. I wish they would have listened, because then that family could have found peace, maybe. You know, it's just
sad. Maybe even with lies, they could put enough stuff with lies together to figure out what he was saying before was truthful or a lie or whatever else, and maybe gave them information they could have used other places. It's
just kind of pieced it together, maybe. Because I think that's where you have to swallow your pride and sit here and listen to these monsters, because even if one thing they're telling you out of 10 things is true, you owe it to those families. That's just what I think. I mean, I'm not an expert on it, but it just makes me sad for those families, being a parent, that they might have been able to get closure.
It definitely makes you think. Now, let's talk about the book that you wrote for a bit. What's the name of it? Where can we find it?
It's From Darkness to Light, and it's by Minnie Alford, and it's on Amazon and Books A Million and Barnes & Noble. And it's wrote, in, like I said in the start of the book, this is written in his own words. I'm not agreeing with Robert. He handed me all of his diaries and journals. And as strange as it sounds, he said, will you write this in my words if I hand you all this? And I said, yes. And even though I don't agree with it, his thoughts, obviously, I did it because if I give my word to somebody, I'm going to honor that. And that's how I wrote it. I didn't want to exploit victims in any way. And it's basically more his life story versus his murders, because that's what he wanted to get out there. And he was a brilliant man. He was a helicopter pilot in the Army, and so intelligent. And that's what I did. So it's basically just written in his words. Even though I don't agree with everything, that's what I did.
That's what you did. And hopefully people who are experts in the field have read the book or will read the book so they can get some type of an idea of what one sick person thought, and maybe helps them understand, apprehend other sick people or help people before they become sick. It's incredible. It is absolutely incredible. And you're working on another book now, correct?
I am.
Can you tell us about that book, please?
It's the one on Philip Jablonski. I've interviewed him for so many years now, over and over again, and interviewed him twice on death row, and he died December 27th, just last month, actually. And he had asked me, if I tell you all this, would you like to write it? And I said, yes. But I said, I can't say you're not a monster, because you are. And he said, I'm fine with that. And he just basically has told me a lot of different things. I hope can maybe one day piece stuff together for people down the road. The difference in between him and Yates was, Yates still wants to deny, and he's still very narcissistic. And Jabonte, he was, yeah, I did it, I don't care. He was just so cold and callous. And because he didn't believe in heaven or hell, Jablonski didn't. But Robert Yates says he does now, and that's kind of also why he wanted me to write it in the way he wrote it, or the way I wrote it, because he said, you know, it's going to tell people that you can be forgiven from anything. And yet again, I'm a Christian, but that's not my job to judge them, and I just wrote it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I wrote it. And then the Jablonski book is going to be, though, very vile, because it's going to be disgusting what all he's done to people. And I wrote that in the beginning of the book. You know, you're going to have a thick skin to continue going through this, because his last victims and who he told me he loved killing the most was his wife and mother-in-law. And he made the mother-in-law watch her daughter die, and then he killed her. And he literally pulled out intestines, and they were along the kitchen floor when the police found them. And one of the policemen said that was the most violent crime scene he had ever had to encounter. And Jablonski just didn't mind doing it. He told me he loved doing it. And he always wanted to taste a small part of them. For instance, with a woman, when he would kill a female, he would eat like one nipple or part of a nipple. And with a man, a small part of their penis he would want to eat, like slice off a small part of skin. And I said, why did you want to do that? Well, you know, it's the obvious, keep them with you forever. But he also told me, I just didn't know what they tasted like. I wanted to taste them. So, and all this is proven. This isn't just hearsay. He actually did do it, and it's in police reports. So it's going to be completely polar opposite, basically, from the book on Robert Yates.
Yeah, I have to ask, how do you go about meeting them?
I'm sorry?
How do you go about meeting these people?
I actually just started writing them, and would write, and, you know, over the years, there's probably been 25 or 30 I've wrote, but I've established almost what I would consider a working relationship with about 12, 13-ish, and two of those have now died, and the others I still, three of them have died. Bobby Joe Long out of Florida was actually the very first serial killer I ever interviewed, and he was executed several months back. He actually finally got it, and he was the very first serial killer I ever communicated with. And I ended up having to stop talking with Bobby Joe because he was becoming so over-sexualized. I couldn't deal with it at that point. I was done, and I ended not talking with him anymore because, you know, and he had told me that, and this is also on the record, I mean, you know, everybody hears stuff, whether it's true or you don't know, but this has been publicized, that after he had had a motorcycle wreck, he became just having to have sex all the time. He had to have sex so many times a day, and that's when he told me, and the motorcycle wreck and that part of it's true, but I don't know if that's when he's claimed that's when he's first started raping, and then the raping turned into murdering. But
yeah,
whether he had raped before then or not, I'm not sure. But he claimed he had not until the motorcycle accident. And he was also in the military. So it's all the most of the people I've talked with have been in the military, and I don't know if that has anything to do with anything or not, but he was so over-sexualized, and I don't think he initially had the heart to want to kill, but I think it turned into that, and that's what makes me wonder, did something, you know, happen, obviously did happen in his brain when he had the motorcycle wreck.
Sure.
What triggered that, and it's like, you know, John Wayne Gacy, when they took out his brain and analyzed it, there was stuff, you know, not as though it was supposed to be, and that takes me back to Philip Zawalski, because he had a infatuation with John Wayne Gacy. And Jablonski was openly bisexual, and he told me that he actually even chose men over women, given the situation. But he loved John Wayne Gacy, and I thought that was odd, how it's almost like he worshipped him. And he drew John Wayne Gacy's Pogo the Clown all the time, and did all the things that Gacy, you know, he was Pogo and went to parties and whatnot. And Jablonski drew him and painted him all the time. And I thought that was interesting, too, how he had such an admiration for him.
Yeah.
I guess we'll never know, but he loved him.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary thought, because people do emulate or want to emulate some of these people.
Yes.
And you hope... And you hope that, how can I put this, because people do different things. If someone wants to write fan fiction on John Wayne Gacy, I guess they have a right to do it. I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to buy it. I'm certainly going to think they're weird, sick people, right? But they have a right to do it,
right.
I guess. But the question becomes, when, if their fantasy becomes, you know, John Gacy killed how many kids, I can do the same thing, I can do more. That's the kind of trouble you think about. So you start off by reading about or finding out about a serial killer of some sort, and then you find out where they are, and you simply write a letter, and you wait for them to write you back or not.
I have done that, but also go actually to the prison. What I try to do is get a standpoint, not from a law enforcement standpoint, but from a standpoint where you talk to me and be honest. Of course, most of them are not. You know, I'm not that foolish, but I wanted to get it from a different standpoint than law enforcement. I wanted to get it from the standpoint of, you know, I have nothing to gain or lose from this. I just want to try to understand where you're coming from and go for it that way, because they don't have to lie to me because I'm not doing anything to them. So they lie to law enforcement. I mean, not always, but, you know, a lot of the time. So that was kind of where I went. I wanted a different standpoint of it and kind of wanted to see if they would open up and talk. And it took years of trying to talk with them and be open and for them to try to be open, I hope, back to me, because I would love for some sort of cases to be solved out of all of this. And I keep thinking, even if there's, you know, only one true story out of this, maybe it could help somebody's family. And some families don't want that reopened. It's opening up a wound, but some of them do. And that's kind of what I've tried to figure out.
You'd like to know what happened to Billy or Susie, you know. But then, you know, I know my daughter passed a few years ago from a heroin overdose.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to just really know what her last year on this earth was like, because how did so many people not know she had a heroin addiction problem? And I reached out to a reporter friend of mine who lived nearby to check some facts off for me. He calls me back and says, Wayne, I can tell you some things that happened, but you probably don't want to know. And really, truly, I don't want to know.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, thank you, ma'am. But yeah. I mean, I know if my son got murdered tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock, I would like to know how that happened. I definitely would, right? But it's, again, this comes to a point when you don't want, at least in my opinion, I personally don't want to know.
Right.
Yeah, but I can see how some people do want to know.
Right.
Yeah. It's just a.
I think from talking with a few of the victims' families, some want to know that they're just not in pain anymore and they're not
yep.
here, they're not being held captive, or, you know, in the remote possibility that that's not very
yeah.
likely, but they want that to know they're not hurting
back,
anymore
right.
type of situation.
Right.
And
right.
that's kind of what, you know, I would never intrude on anybody or their family. I just, when I've talked to victims' families, some, you know, want to know and some don't. But I think a lot just want to know they're not in pain anymore.
Yeah. That somebody's not kept in the basement someplace.
Right.
Yeah. It's a situation. And for what it's worth, I want to commend you greatly for taking the opportunity to study these individuals, pass that knowledge along to us with the books that you write. So we, the public, and we hope members of law enforcement and the professional community can learn more about these people and take better protection action to help them mm-hmm. before they go become murdering creatures or help solve cases. You know, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now, we can find you, your books, where again, on Amazon. Where do you hang out on social media, if so, where?
I'm mostly just on Twitter under Murder Journals.
Okay. And if we wanted to communicate with you about an interesting case that we might know about or information about someone that you might know something about, we can contact you via Twitter then, I take it? It's the best way?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes.
Okay. Do you have a webpage now, or will you be having a webpage soon, do you think?
I'm hoping to have a webpage soon. I don't yet. I'm not very tech savvy. My children have helped me, but I'm working on it, so.
Yeah. I'll recommend. WordPress is pretty easy to use. And it's free. It's free. Yeah, you can do basic WordPress for free. You know, I would recommend that you do it, if only to talk about the information that you have, or, you know, and the like. It can be very, very useful. So I would encourage you to do that. So, in the years to come, who would you like to talk to next? If you had a perfect world and you could talk to anybody out there, who would that person be?
Oh, that's a good question. I would have to think about that one for a while. Who would you choose to do?
Serial killers scare the hell out of me. They scare the hell out of me. I'm more than willing to talk about the crazy ones that are long dead, like Jack Ripper. He ain't going to do much to anybody else. He's kind of like dead.
Right.
You know, looking at some of the Masters ones in the past that I've looked at, right, they're dead. They're not going to do anything. You got the people like the married couple in Canada who, for a wedding present, the girl gives her husband her sister.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And that I first heard about it, I thought it was somebody's idea of a really weird book or maybe a movie to come out with. But when you find out it happened in real life, scares me to death. What?
Why would she have allowed her sister to have been tortured the way she did? That's mind-boggling to me.
Why was she there for it? I love you, and I know you like whatever. I bought you a new rifle, or my father used to buy my mom a truck. Sometimes he bought her a new hunting rifle if she needed one or not, right? I get. I don't get, gee, dear, I love you, here's my sister.
Oh, my word. See, that's the ultimate betrayal to me, to family. Obviously, your children would be first, but then a sibling or something, why do you do that? I don't understand.
Right. And then to think that she got away with it, and she's out, and she's had children, it's like, So little Johnny gets 14 and figures out who mom is and looks her up online. Oh, yeah, that's a conversation around the supper table.
I know. It's absolutely terrible, and she should not be walking free. That's awful.
No, I agree, but, you know, the Canadian criminal system, just like ours, sometimes makes mistakes.
Right.
And we can't, and it's scary stuff. It is. I mean, I remember I had the opportunity back in the day, I interviewed a Milwaukee police detective about the motorcycle gangs and the like. And of course, because he was a Milwaukee detective, one time I had to talk to him about Dahmer.
Mm-hmm.
He told me some things I did not know about Dahmer and the situation when they released that young man back to Dahmer, who then he went out and killed, right? That the Milwaukee policeman, okay. If I remember the conversation correctly, that the Milwaukee policeman involved were working 12-hour shifts without days off because of the situation in Milwaukee and the manpower needs of the Milwaukee Police Department, made me understand this. And that doesn't excuse what they did. And again, they got their jobs back because that's what the court said had to happen, right? But
right.
I'm thinking, if I'm a cop, I'm working 12-hour days without a day off, I'm not even close to being 100%.
Right.
You know, am I going to be clear-headed enough to think, okay, there might be something more to this than what I think it is? But again,
mm-hmm.
it also goes at the time that people were way more homophobic than we are now, I hope. That it was easy for them to dismiss that as a boyfriend-boyfriend problem, and it's not our problem anymore. You know, let them go and work it out. It's horrific. I mean, it's
it really is.
It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
It's like you have to study these types of things, I think, in order to get a grasp on it, but it's also horrifying. And there's days I can... It's almost as though, and this sounds terrible, I've become numb to the men or the women that are killed. But when it's the children, I have to back off and just like take a week off before I try to do it anymore, because the children is what rips your heart out. And it's not that you want a man or a woman to die. It just doesn't hurt you like a child. And it's just, I wonder what is wrong with society, that it's okay that people are killed. And I know it's not okay with the children. It's just, I can't do that. That's so hard. And
I agree. I mean, to me, I live in the inner city of a Midwestern city. I live in the inner city slums of a Midwestern city, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have neighbors on either side of me that I would find it hard. I'm a horrible human being, for what I'm about to say, right? I would find it hard.
Mm-hmm.
I knew they're having a fight with a friend, or with boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, to call the cops,
right.
Because we've done it so many times and nothing happens to make that phone call again. But I would hope that any time I saw a child in some type of a trouble, I could always pick up that phone. And it really,
always.
Really bothers me. Yeah, I always pick up that phone. It really bothers myself is when I pick up the phone and say, at such a location, there is a child being beaten by an adult, and you give them the necessary address. And you tell them, please hurry, you know, and they don't
mm-hmm.
show up. And they don't show up. And they don't show up. Or you call social services, and they say, please leave a message. And you give them your complete contact information, and you never get that call back.
Oh, I know. We've had that trouble almost as well. I understand, and it's just when the kids are involved, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And my daughter is in... criminal justice. She just graduated college, and she's now getting her master's degree. And while she's getting her master's degree, she's working as a correctional counselor. And she has wrote warrant after warrant, and they're not arrested. And she gives people a break where I would not. But this one individual has been mean not just to his wife but to his children, and he continues to test positive for drugs, and they will not arrest him.
And
to the point, I'm really frustrated.
I agree.
And I know they're overworked. And I know they're overworked, but come on. You can't do that.
Right. At the same time, I try to remember that we all have the ability to change. I mean, at one time, I was a worthless fucking alcoholic. The alcoholic that you see in TV. It was me, right? But through the love of my now wife, who was absolutely perfect human being, gave me the opportunity to change and quit drinking. I'm a much better person than I was then. Absolutely.
That's really awesome.
And so you have to give people the opportunity. You have to give people the opportunity to change, right? Now, everybody's going to change, of course, not, right? Most of them won't. But you have to. I try to. I have to give the opportunity for people to change. Because I changed.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so
she's very giving like that, and you know she's doing the right thing. It's just I think this person's going to be dangerous, and they're not.
Issue
the warrant.
You want the guy or the woman that beats their kid put in jail. Actually, you want the police to show up, beat the shit out of them, take them to the hospital, and then put them in jail. But you want that kid protected. You know, you want that woman protected. And that's one thing, too, is that we can't change the world. We can't change a little part of it. We definitely can educate ourselves more. What I want to thank you for is taking that opportunity by writing the books that you write to help us learn more so we can get that education.
Well, thank you as well.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, and I'm hoping that just a little insight could maybe help just one person, and it would be worth everything.
I think you've done more than that. I think because you help educate people with the book that you've written, the books that you will write, you know, that education process has started that change. I expect you've helped more than one person, if nothing more than understand what goes on about them, you know, how, why things happen. You know, I think that helps a lot.
I appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very humbled and thankful.
Thank you. You're more than welcome. Now, what's the name of your book again so we can all go out and buy it on Amazon today?
It's From Darkness to Light, and it's the story of Robert Yates. And hopefully my next one will be out within 6 months is my hope.
Okay. Now, to go to the technical thing of writing this for a second, so you self-published on Amazon, correct?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I love Amazon. I like the ability that self-publishing Amazon gives us. Because it makes our books easier. My books. Well, I'm switching it. It's running right away. I love Amazon for that reason. You know, I turn all my books into audiobooks, too, which I want to recommend that you do. Because it allows other people the ability to read. I mean, Frank does not sell very many audiobooks, but it was free to do using the program that Amazon has to do that. But that gives more people also the opportunity to hear about Frank, my guy, and tell their friends about Frank, there I got my guy, and maybe they buy an audiobook themselves, maybe they go back and buy the Kindle, maybe they buy the paperback. You know, it's all a process of educating the readers about what the book that you are, I've written, is about. And may see if there's enough interest for them to get it. I think Amazon with Kindle Direct Print really has given the opportunity for people like you and I to reach out to a base of people who are interested in the subject matter. Because I know, at least with my book and Frank, no publishing house in the world would have touched it. You know, but hey, I sell books. I sell books. That's all I need. You know, it helps pass the time, right? Pass the time. So. If you're going to give a piece of advice to someone who wanted to write a book on the same thing that you wrote written about, what would that piece of advice be?
Just write from your heart and that you're wanting to help people. And even though you're not necessarily an expert in any way, you're just trying to help other people. And I think if that's your goal, you know, it'll be successful. I just think... just getting the word out there and trying to get people to understand there are bad people and there are good people, and just educating in that type of way, I think, would be my best thought.
Yes, ma'am. Now, one other question I got to ask, because I will be asked if I don't. Do you ever feel in danger when you be talking to these people?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Many times. Because, for instance, when I was at San Quentin the two times as of late, you're in a cage, literally. It's a cage with a killer, and they're not handcuffed. They're not anything. And you don't see a guard, but maybe once every hour, I would say. And the only time I asked for a guard was when I had to go to the restroom, and you literally do not see a guard, and it is so loud in there. If he had wanted to kill me, he could have easily killed me, as odd as that sounds, because it's a cage, and then it's covered in plexiglass. I'm assuming where they can spit or throw stuff at guards or whatnot. And it's approximately 6 cells on one side and 6 cells on the other side. And, yeah, I kind of felt in danger, yes. But
wow,
it's just worth it to me to see if I can help somebody. I don't know. It's strange as
well. I appreciate that. I can rest assured I will not be doing that, because
I actually had a person right across from me. It's, and you know something I did know, though, that kind of bothered me? Scott Peterson was in there, and he actually had in, I know they can go to commissary and get hair gel or whatever, but he had his boots shined, his hair was styled, and you're not supposed to, when you go in there, you can't wear even like a bra with underwire in it. You've got to, you can only take a baggie with your ID and your acceptance forms. Literally, you go in there with nothing, not a phone, nothing. And whoever was visiting him was able to bring in pictures and do all these different things. And I thought, well, why is he getting preferential treatment? That just did not seem right. But it is what it is. I guess he's more high profile than, you know, his visitors maybe go through more than I, you know. I had the process to get in. It's a huge background check. And it just though made me wonder, he had a larger cell, because there is one larger cell on death row that you're able to visit in, and he had the larger cell. And it just makes you wonder.
Yeah,
I really don't
know. Maybe the lawyers he had, perhaps. I know, I can't mention a name. I know that the person, a very nice person, shall we say, was making a tour of the country, spilling his guts about murders he's been involved in, and he's getting rack star treatment.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, but that's because of who he can tell on. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's all because, you know, he can tell on all kinds of people that obviously government wants the information in so they can put him away. So they treat him nice.
Right.
So anyway, I do appreciate you coming on the show. It meant so much to me to have you on. I've learned so much today. And yes, I'll be having nightmares for quite some time.
Well, thank you so very much. I am so appreciative.
And where do we find you on Twitter one more time?
It's under Murder Journals, and then it's Minnie Alford 16.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I thank you very much for coming on the show. And I wish you the best of luck, and I know we'll be talking to you when your next book comes out.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you as well.
Thank you, ma'am. With that, you have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening out there in Mafia Free Radio, or Radio Free Mafia, I'm sorry. This is your host, Wayne Klingman, and you can find all my stuff, tons and tons of stuff, especially get all of them. Buy many copies. Give them to your friends. Make more friends. You can find them all by Googling my app, so you go to Amazon and entering my name, Wayne Klingman. You can find them all. Or you can follow the link on the show notes of this page. Thank you very much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. I really appreciate her for coming on the show and spending so much of her time this morning with us. This is absolutely incredibly fascinating to me. And in many ways, she's a far braver person than I am. Thanks a lot for listening. I really, really, truly appreciate it again. Have fun. Bye.